Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
History in 5 songs. With host Martin Popoff. A production of Pantheon Podcasts. Let's rock out with Martin.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back again to another episode of History in 5 Songs with Martin Popoff, brought to you by the good people at Pantheon Podcasts. We are pleased, as always, to be part of this fast and always expanding Pantheon Podcast Network of wise music swamis making these audio podcasts. We're available on Spotify, iTunes, and over 40 other podcast platforms. All right, this is episode 228. I'm calling this Corporate Solo Albums. I tried to think of another snappy name. I thought of putting the word insipid in there or dreary or whatever, but then I'm thinking, oh, are they all going to line up? And then I thought, should I put 80s in? And then I realized somewhere from the 90s, maybe I wanted to talk a little bit about the 70s. Just to keep it nice and general and use the term that I originally thought of, you know, corporate, right? What does corporate mean? We all know what it means, but it means on a major label, a lot of musicians, producers, expensive, it sounds very commercial, all that stuff that we're going to get to. So this is basically about these solo albums, and most of these are going to align to certain rules, and as usual, I've broken them into categories. But the whole idea here is, I started thinking about this one earlier before I started thinking of an episode I might call Shadow Catalogs, but I thought, this aligns with that somewhat in that there are some catalogs of bands, and maybe they're not even big catalogs, that we tend to forget that there's a very similar album that could fit into the catalog that happens to be by one of the key members of the band doing a solo album sort of thing. So this is a little bit like that, but it's also a little bit like all these albums are kind of similar in that. So these are solo albums that are essentially, you know, one or two off. These are not exactly solo careers that these guys went on. And you're going to notice also, well, there's a lot of similarities we'll get to, but you're also going to notice that these are all American artists, because I think these American artists are the ones who are sitting around LA bored and can go out with big shots from the record label or A&R people or producers. And there's relationships that are forged when you actually live in Hollywood, right? Close to where most of the record labels are. And I think sometimes this is why some of these albums come up. You know, other reasons they come up are, you are essentially forced into, like, the band splits acrimoniously. They may get back together again at another time or whatever, but you're essentially, you got to do something. That's one thing. And some of these albums happen because... there is this idea where management or the label kind of grabs you by the back of your collar and says, we kind of think you're a star. We want to try something with you. We want to try make you a star. You really are the star of this band. Everybody looks at you and asks you for the interviews anyways. Why not make a solo album? We'll see if we could make some money here, right? Because that's kind of how all these sort of feel like, right? You know, the other similarity I think you're going to find in these is that there's not really a particularly high creative drive. There's not a big reason to do these albums. They're just kind of arrangements, right? But yeah, we're going to look at the similarities of these further as we get into the tracks. Let's do that now, I guess. So yeah, take a listen to our first selection. This is Lou Gramm with Just Between You and Me. How it gets back to me, you're getting reckless, girl. Okay, so this is from Long Hard Look. So this is the second one after Ready or Not. This is 1989. The theme here is these album covers. So I wanted to pick one that really, aligns with this album cover thing. So I like that the title is Long Hard Look, because what you get out of these corporate solo albums is, that rock star, just him on the cover staring at, or her, Stevie Nicks, kind of fits into this a little bit. What's her name from the Motels? I think she's got one too. I didn't really include it here, but yeah, the idea is this Lou Gramm cover is perfect for our cover theme, because it's just Lou on the cover. And what else do we have? We have a black and white photo, right? So these are often black and white photos, very conservative corporate type. So we don't go too crazy. Solo artists don't get logos, basically, right? So yeah, we've got that. We've got these guys are often in suit jackets. You know, the Robin Zander album from 1993 is another perfect one. So you got a black and white photo, you got a close-up shot, looking pensive. It's self-titled, again, kind of a arch 90s sort of font. Buck Dharma flat out. Not as characteristic cover-wise, but it does have that clean sort of look. I mean, he's on Portrait, right? CBS Portrait. So it definitely looks like an expensive, sumptuous photo shot. It's a very good photograph. Fee Waybill, Read My Lips, doesn't quite fit in this whole thing. Tommy Shaw, though, definitely does. I've taken a couple of these out. Well, what do we got here? So I just go through these. So yeah, Lou Gramm, Long Hard Look. You know, he's just kind of looking out at the catalog. That's the other thing, catalog camera. That's the other thing. You often get part of their face in shadow, or shadows on these things. And Lou Gramm, half his face is in shadow. So you're getting a long, hard look from one eye, basically. He's got his hand up in a sort of thoughtful way. So that's that one. Bob Geldof, I think, kind of fits in this too. Moving on from the... from the Boomtown Rats, I'm looking at one that I have on CD here, The Vegetarians of Love. I think he's got an earlier one that's even more sumptuous looking, but this, he kind of makes fun of it and scratches out his face, but it is a black and white photograph of just Bob, right? Let's see, where are my Tommy Shaws? So I've got some Tommy Shaws here that fit into this. Girls with Guns. There's a picture of him and a girl holding up a hand like a gun. So that's not particularly characteristic. But the What If album is perfect. It's a black and white photo again, where Tommy's just kind of looking thoughtfully out. And there's a woman in the background. It's all soft focus sort of thing. Same thing with Ambition from him. Another black and white photo, like a very arty sort of photo shoot. Kind of a cool photo there. Other ones that fit into this covers thing. Rex Smith, Forever. Black and white photo again of just Rex Smith. Kind of girly writing on it. So that's another little bit of a clue these things happen. And I think the most iconic in terms of the whole cover thing that fits into this, although the artist doesn't fit totally into it, but the artist does sort of fit into this. Don Henley, The End of Innocence. So again, very classy, expensive looking situation of typefaces and fonts. And there he is, you know, with the 90s haircut, the hair hanging down. And he's got a cigarette in his hand. He's looking out at you. And then Inside Job's kind of the same thing, only it's a color shot. But he's you know, looking out. And then, you know, I wanted to pick one that again, doesn't really fit the idea of this show, but it fits the aesthetic. Lawrence Gowan, But You Can Call Me Larry. So this has a really sort of iconic Hugh Syme sort of feel. And, well, Hugh Syme did it. But it's basically another one of these soft focus black and white pictures, kind of sepia tone, you know, very thoughtful sort of typefaces and stuff. I mean, Hugh Syme really has this this dated to the 90s sort of look, and you know, this is one that definitely feels that way for that. What else do we got here for the cover thing? Kane Roberts, Saints and Sinners, some more of the second Kane Roberts. Black and white photo, kind of a sultry shot. Another totally iconic one for this is Eric Martin, I'm Only Fooling Myself. Again, black and white, in shadow, self-titled. Back cover is black and white. Let's see. He's got a few different ones with a few different looks. And even Lou Gramm, Ready or Not, fits this. The Mick Jones album by Foreigner totally fits this. Black and white, kind of blurry shot. It's a self-titled. Barry Goudreau, he's sort of standing there. It's muted colors. Sports jackets is a big thing here, too. So in these 80s and 90s these corporate solo albums, the guys are dressed up kind of corporate, right? They're often in these sport jackets, not particularly suits, but they're kind of looking that way. The Joe Lynn Turner album, even though it's a color shot, this Rescue Me album, it's basically he's looking pensive. He's kind of doing that clutching his shirt that he kind of does. So that's our first theme is the graphics of these things is your first clue that you are into one of these corporate solo albums. Let's take a short break. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, back again here, History in 5 Songs with Martin Popoff. So this theme, I don't know, it's kind of a weird theme, isn't it? I mean, I don't think anybody's really talked about these things, but it's like a forgotten little part of the music industry that I wanted to celebrate and remind people about these albums. When we get to the last category, sound, sound style, where we talk about the music a little bit, there's not a lot of great value to these unless you specifically like this kind of music. Let me kind of tell you what kind of music it is as we get there. But let's go on to our second selection here. This is Eric Martin. These Are the Good Times. All right, so the idea here is, the theme here is producers. Richie Zito, 1987. So Richie Zito gets involved in a lot of these kind of corporate-y sort of albums. He's got this big, modern drum sound, and the keys are braying sort of thing. Buck Dharma, Flat Out on Portrait. That's kind of a self-produced sort of thing. Robin Zander, there's five producers on the Robin Zander album from 93. So Robin Zander only has the two things, the two albums, but you see such a marked difference in the sound and the style and even the look of them. But the 93 one is so iconically one of these corporate solo albums. So five producers, including Jimmy Iovine, right? So he, the big shot there. Fee Waybill, Read My Lips. You've got David Foster and Steve Lukather. Kane Roberts, Saints and Sinners, produced by Desmond Child. We've got Lou Gramm, Long Hard Look is Peter Wolfe and Eric Tomgren. Barry Goudreau's album, so the Boston guy, his album is Barry and John Boylan. Eric Martin is Richie Zito, as we mentioned. Jolynn Turner, interestingly enough, Roy Thomas Baker. I looked at a whole bunch of these. There's a lot of names that I don't know, and some of them are self-produced, like a Mick Jones knows what he's doing kind of thing. But again, It's all, you get this LA involvement where it's kind of mixed in with these big producers and songwriters that are right there on the scene that these records get made with. Okay, let's move on to our third selection here. This is Fee Waybill with Saved My Life. Okay, so what do we think of this album? So again, I keep forgetting this album exists somewhat. I'm looking at my copy now. I got it signed by Fee and Prairie Prince and Roger Steen. These guys are kind of involved a little bit. This feels exactly like a Tubes album, but again, a little more corporate, a little more pop, a little less quirky, a little bit less charm. The theme here is musicians. So when you get to these records, you get a lot of guest musicians and big superstars. You get a lot of studio people. So on Fee's album, you've got David Foster, who we just mentioned produces as well. Keyboard, Steve Lukather. He's a notorious guy that shows up on a lot of these kinds of records. Guitar, Jerry Marotta, drum. From the Peter Gabriel Band, right? Mike Landau, guitar, Larry Klein, bass, Steve Percaro, keyboard, synth programming. The Robin Zander album, even though Robin does guitars, keyboards, vocals, there's about 40 musicians on that thing, including Greg Bissonette, Mike Campbell, Don Felder, Mick Fleetwood. The Buck Dharma album, again, self-produced, but you'd never know it. I mean, it doesn't sound like a... particularly like a Blue Oyster Cult production or even like a bad production that someone who isn't a producer would do. It just sounds really clean and aseptic and, again, kind of corporate, kind of anemic. Players-wise on that, you've got Dennis Dunaway, Neil Smith from, the Alice Cooper family who are close by, right? Steve Jordan, Will Lee, Ron Riddle, and Rick Downey. So you get some Blue Oyster Cult associated guys there. Otherwise this one, he's the thing with Buck is he's an East Coast guy, right? So you don't get this large proponent of these or propensity or whatever of these LA guys coming in. Dennis DeYoung, Boomchild in 1989, you got a million musicians on that. Kane Roberts, Saints and Sinners, the drummer is Myron Grumbacher, right, from Pat Benatar and Derringer. Lou Gramm has Nils Lofgren as part of his album. Mick Jones has about 30 musicians on that. Ian Hunter, Hugh McCracken, Andy Newmark, Dennis Elliott. So you often get on these corporate solo albums, you do get a little bit of, the band coming in sometimes as well, showing that band relations are generally not that bad, I suppose, in some cases. He's also got Billy Joel guesting on there, Carly Simon. The Eric Martin album's got Nathan East, Mickey Curry, Vinnie Colaiuta, Richie Zito, three or four guitarists, bass and keyboards and drummers on that one. Jolynn Turner's album has Alan Greenwood, Chuck Berge, Bobby Massano. So again, it's interesting. You've got Alan Greenwood from Florida in there, but again, we've got an East Coast thing getting put together here. So it feels a little less corporate than if you were a West Coast sort of band. But yeah, this Eric Martin situation is interesting because, before he has the Eric Martin Band, and you can kind of see this thing happening where, okay, now we're really trying this. We're really trying, you can hear from the sound of that song that we're really trying to, let's see if we can make this guy a pop star, right? And we're going to bring in all the 80s tropes to try work it that way and see if we could break this guy big. Because the other sort of theme with this episode is that there are guys who make these iconic corporate solo albums, but I didn't include the ones in effect that it worked So they go on to have a solo career. So you've got your likes of your John Waits. Like I say, sometimes these things start because the old band breaks up, and what else are you going to do, right? Somebody sits down and says, well, let's not try the old tired brand that didn't work anyways. Let's try this new band. Let's just use your name, right? Billy Squire is another example of that, where, you know, you could say there was one of these, but then all of a sudden, you know, he's doing better than Piper. So we move on to that. All right, let's move on to our next theme, which is songwriters. Take a listen to this. This is Kane Roberts with Twisted. Okay, so the first one looks so different and sounds different. I don't really feel it gets included in this, but man, this Kane Roberts album. So Saints and Sinners, the second one, the songwriters on this song are Desmond Child, Diane Warren, and Kane Roberts. And you listen to it and it absolutely sounds like a song that could have gone on an Alice Cooper album. It could have gone on Kiss, Hot in the Shade, or Crazy Nights. It's absolutely, and there's a bunch of material in here that just sounds like Alice Cooper trash, hey stupid type stuff, right? In the songwriting front, we've got the Robin Zander album. Almost every song on there, so this is iconically how these things happen as well. Almost every song on there is Robin writing with somebody. And we know Robin Zander does that. He's a song collaborator at times, so he's done this for other bands and in Cheap Trick and whatnot. That's an interesting thing you see with these corporate solo albums. So it's Robin writing with a bunch of different people. But Neil Young's on there. Dave Stewart's on there. There's a Harry Nilsson song on there. Fee Waybill, Read My Lips. Again, Foster, Lukather, Waybill. So they're almost all David Foster, which is about as corporate as you can get. And Steve Lukather and Fee. And there's one with Richard Marx. We've got the Lou Gramm album is basically Lou and Bruce Turgeon. Although when we get to a long, hard look, you've got Bruce Turgeon and Peter Wolf. Peter Wolf was a big part of that album. The Barry Goudreau album is kind of interesting because you've got Brad Delp and Fran Cosmo. So you've got an early iconic Boston member and a later Boston member and Barry. So that's pretty in-house. That's not too bad. Eric Martin is all kind of like publishing house songs, like singer song, you know, song doctor songs, right? That's kind of the idea here. Joe Lynn Turner, you've got Joe and Alan Greenwood. So the Foreigner guy, the keyboardist. So it's Joe writing with his keyboardist mostly. Rex Smith, who we're going to talk about as a kind of an interesting special case. You get a lot of covers and you get the Chin Chapman thing. That's come up a couple of times on here, but that's more of an earlier old school thing. You got Steve Lawrence, Bruce Hart on things. The beginning of the album starts out like that. Let's move on to our fifth selection here. Take a listen to this. This is Tommy Shaw with Lonely School. Okay, so this is from Girls with Guns, and the theme here is the sound and the style of these albums. And I know we've dropped in on this a little bit, but let's look at a few of them. So the Buck Dharma albums. So let's start with this album. I wanted to pick this because it is so mean, median, average of this sound, right? It's pop, it's hard rock, it's stadium rock, it's braying keyboards, it's every different style of pop. It's quiet and loud. It's anthemic choruses, right? So, and more than anything, it's that production sound that you get on these corporate solo albums. They're almost all, like I say, they're all like L.A., dripping in L.A. sort of styles, right? And sounds, and these dated production sounds from the 80s with the big clattery tom-toms, big snare, tight, clacky bass drum as well quite often. But the Buck Dharma album, as we all say in the Blue Oyster Cult business, it's basically a poppy Blue Oyster Cult album, like very poppy, poppier than anything they'd ever done, and very clean and very kind of conservatively played. The Fee Way Bill is like a loud, braying, obnoxious 80s Tubes album, right? So it's like the poppier songs off of like Outside Inside and whatchamacallit, what's the other one called? Anyways, those later albums and Completion Background Principle to some extent, but more of like an 80s vibe. The Robin Zander is exactly like the Eric Martin and pretty much like the Tommy Shaw and pretty much like who else? The Jolin Turner somewhat. The Kane Roberts is more like pop metal, hair metal, as we said, kind of like the commercial side of Alice Cooper. A big, massive production sound on that. The Eric Martin brings in a little bit. I almost could have included this version of Eric Martin a little bit in the Bruce Springsteen family idea, right? But he's more like in the John Waite family. So it's got these... these typical sort of heartland, Rust Belt, Midwest rock sort of choruses to it. A little bit of Bad Company to it, but more like 80s Bad Company. But yeah, Eric Martin kind of fits with John Waite. But like I say, he was sort of made to try this solo thing, tried it a couple of times, and then Mr. Big happens, right? The Mick Jones and the Lou Grahams, all of them are essentially shadow catalog of Foreigner. They're basically like poppy Foreigner, essentially. The Steve Perry totally fits this thing. It sounds exactly like the mean median average of all of these, just very poppy. And the Jolin Turner, big keyboards, again, clattery drums. Rex Smith, we're going back to kind of an earlier, that's right, I didn't actually pick any Rex Smith to play here, but I wanted to talk about him for a second because, David Krebs is a good buddy of mine, and, he's told me that whole story about, so essentially what you have with Rex Smith is you have, an early blueprint of this idea. It's different than the Alice Cooper one, different, but a little similar, but it's much more deliberate and much more corporate. I mean, Alice Cooper continues on with Welcome to My Nightmare as a solo artist, but it's not particularly corporate, and he kind of keeps the same sound, right? But with Rex Smith, the idea is, management yanks Rex out of Rex Smith and says, you're really the... David loves Rex Smith. I mean, he thinks he is an absolute star, and it worked out. I mean, they made a great career for Rex Smith as a recording career, as an actor as well, in theater as well as on in TV and movies, right? But essentially what they did is they made Rex kind of... I've got three of my Rex albums here. They made Rex essentially a teeny bopper pop star, a heartthrob sort of thing. The first one is Sooner or Later, and it's got completely girly writing on it, and it's just Rex, a big picture of Rex smiling. There's a bit of a link back to the first Rex album because he's in a red shirt. But yeah, and then on the back there's a woman in a soft kind of focus. And she's got like a locket around her neck with a picture of Rex in it. So, Forever is the black and white photo. So that's the iconic look used in the 80s. Everlasting Love, just, big picture of Rex's face on the cover. That is another thing that you see in these corporate solo albums. Even bigger face on the back fills up almost the whole thing. Called Everlasting Love. Camouflage, just picture of Rex looking kind of muscular on a white background. And then another big picture of Rex on a white background on the back. So that's kind of what you do with these corporate solo albums as well. So yeah, there you go. Those are our all our themes. Again, we had album covers. We had there's certain trends with producers. There's certain trends with musicians. There's certain trends with how the songs are written. And there's a certain sound. So those were our five categories. My honorable mentions, I mean, you guys can tell me on the Facebook page whether these line up or not. I've put them here because they line up in some ways and not in other ways. Jeff Lynne, you might think about. You might think about Roger Hodgson. You might think about Greg Lake. Steve Jones actually kind of fits this. What is he? He's almost, well, besides our honorable mentions, he's kind of our first British guy. Well, I mean, we might have had a few, you know, semi-British guys along the way here, but yeah, so Steve Jones, and he's also coming from a completely different discipline, but you think of Fire and Gasoline and the idea, so he kind of fits this because he moves to LA and he just becomes a guy hanging around, right? And then so they put him forward. Even the album cover looks like, okay, we're going to try and make you a solo star. We're talking about the Sex Pistols guy here, right? So he fits in this thing as well. Richard Marx kind of fits, except he's never been a band guy. He's more of like a solo, but the look of the album's the same. Sound, the writers, all that stuff totally fits this. It's just that, you know, he's not the corporate solo album, the one-off, let's try this, did it work, did it not work, you know, blah blah blah. Debbie Harry, right? So you get Debbie Harry, Cuckoo and all that, you know, she's Blondie, let's try Debbie Harry, see what happens. Freddie Mercury, does that fit? Mr. Bad Guy, I don't know. Stevie Nicks, does that fit? David Gilmour, again, not really, because, you know, when I'm feeling there seems to be a little bit more of an elevated level of creativity and a reason to make these albums. It takes it away from just being this kind of insipid, dreary, corporate, stifled, claustrophobic, aseptic sort of idea. So does that really fit? I don't really think so. Don Dokken Up From the Ashes. You know, I wanted to mention this one because the other thing with a lot of these albums is that they're not particularly a lot different than what they did in the old band anyways, right? And I think that you get that with that. Mick Phelan had mentioned a couple of these. I asked him and he gave some suggestions. And it gave some food for thought, even though I felt like it was a little off. But he mentioned Peter Criss. So, you know, I don't... That's the other cool thing about this concept is that I went through a ton of the big bands and you don't really feel that there are too many of these from most of the big bands. It is a bit of a rarity. And then when you see that similarity, that's what I found amusing and wanted to do. But here's one that's kind of interesting. So you do get these from, it's not just classic rock that does these, but John Doe, Paul Westerberg, Bob Mould. John Doe, you know, the first one's got a black and white picture. It looks a little arty, right? Compared to X. It's like mellower, more country, more roots rocky X. So that kind of fits this idea. Let's try make a star out of John Doe because it hasn't really turned out great for X. Same with Paul Westerberg. You start moving away, you get up into, Don't Look Down. All Shook Down. You get into those later years and, you know, at the end, you've got an album that was supposed to be a Paul Westerberg solo album. And then he goes solo and what do you get? You get the black and white pictures. It looks kind of, you know, pretentious or, you know, it's less goofy, right? It's like, oh, we're making him out to be this serious artist. Maybe we can have a hit with this guy as a solo guy. So there's kind of a bit of a corporate bent in Replacements, assuaging over to becoming Paul Westerberg, right? Bob Mould, kind of the same thing. You had Husker Du, you got Sugar, but you got Bob Mould as a solo artist. What was that called? Workbook or whatever. But it's more serious looking, more thoughtful, right? And musically, he's kind of the same tooling, even though he does some more electronic stuff as well, but kind of the same thing. Does Mick Jagger fit in this? So, you know, you get solo albums out of these guys because they're fighting and they can't get Rolling Stones albums out or whatever. But the Mick Jagger albums, they almost feel like they could fit into this thing because they are, they are, you know, big guest stars and very corporate, and you can tell a lot of work went into them, right? So it kind of feels that way as well. And then reaching back to the 70s, you might pick something like the Dan McCafferty solo album from Nazareth, so it fits here. You know, it's all like outside songwriting. But, you know, the idea again is let's throw Dan to the wall and see if he sticks, right? Let's see if we can make a pop icon out of the most important guy in the band. David Johansen's career feels a little bit like this as well, because, you know, you basically stick him on the cover of all those albums. He's cut his hair. It's just looking a little more upscale than New York Dolls. The songs are a little snappier, a little more immediate, a little more commercial. So the idea is, can we turn David Johansen into a star and finally cash in on that legendary status? I feel they did a bit of this with Roger Daltrey from time to time, right? Trying to turn him into a pop star. You know, I've mentioned John Waite, Billy Squire, Don Henley. They kind of fit in a different category because they're successful. And they have, you know, a long run as solo artists. And Phil Collins doesn't really fit this either, because I don't really feel like that first Phil Collins album, even though it sounds corporate, I don't think the motivation was this LA thing we were talking about here. So it doesn't quite fit. Mick Phelan mentioned, and I thought this was completely valid, Chris Cornell's Scream. So we've got some later examples here. I feel that was an idea of, let's try make this guy a pop star. And then they put him together. I think Timbaland's part of that thing. But yeah, you know, outside people, different sound, you know, the look of it as well. And then I feel you kind of get that with Vince Neil Exposed as well. Put him together with some guys, make a better version of Motley Crue, you know, with less personality, like saw off the personality edges, and just put him in front of this tight, efficient band. Even the front cover looks arty. It's technically, I guess, a black and white picture, but it's a little more than that, I suppose. Mick Phelan mentioned Fergal Sharkey. He mentioned Midge The Gift. He mentioned David Crosby, Oh Yes I Can. I don't feel the Tommy Lee that he mentioned, Never Dull Moment, really fits this. Angry Anderson kind of fits. You know, I even thought Rick Derringer, going back to being from Derringer, after If I Weren't So Romantic, I'd Shoot You, to Guitars and Women, Rick Derringer, feels a little bit like this as well. Feels like somebody thought, let's put the Derringer brand aside and let's get this Derringer thing going again, or Rick Derringer. So there you go. That is our sad Sunday afternoon soap opera, dusty soap opera, weekday afternoon. You know, when you turn your TV on and you see a soap opera and it almost makes you fall asleep immediately and you got to panic. And maybe this is just me, but it is a funny thing about me. I get instantly depressed if I crank on a TV in the afternoon and I see a soap opera. I immediately lose energy and get depressed and gotta panic and turn the channel really quickly. And that's what these corporate solo albums feel like to me. This is just a part of the industry where I don't like almost most of these, right? Almost any time they do this, it just feels cynical and commercial, and we're just after the money. And did these albums really need to happen? We're just moving around a bunch of parts and seeing if we can have a hit kind of thing. There you go. If you like the show and want to support future episodes, go to ko-fi.com/MartinPopoff. Hit that red support button and buy me a coffee or a pint. It's a $3 PayPal kind of thing. That's why they say that. This week, I want to thank Joe Becht, Andy at Black Sugar Transmission, Jamie Laszlo. Thanks again, Jamie. I mean, I love doing our shows together. We've got our regular Wednesday, 7 o'clock Eastern album cover shows, and Jamie's been on probably all those, right, Jamie? And it's been a blast, and we keep doing those. Pretty interesting. Augustine Garcia de Paredes, Philip Edward Phyllis, Steve Polari, John Stuckey, William Walker, Daryl Woodard. What do we got here? Dan Rosen, Robert Yates. I think I mixed two lists together. There's a bit of last week and this week in that one. For the books, you can go to martinpopoff.com for all your book needs. I just got in The Sun Goes Down, the second part of the Thin Lizzy story. I got the new one of that one, Emerald. What else did I run out of that I just got from Weimer? oh yeah, I was out of Smoking Valves. That came in, but I got more of the Cure one, the Cure panel book, the Bluish Cult panel book. Still got The Who, still got David Bowie, all those big expensive ones. Kiss will be back in stock in a couple of weeks. There you go. I don't know what to recommend to go play out of all these, frankly, but you know what? I really got a soft spot for those Eric Martin albums. I just love that guy as an artist. I love his later solo albums. I play a lot of those records a lot. And even this one, I was pleasantly surprised. I mean, that one really feels like it should have been a massive, massive hit. Most of these actually feel that way, that somebody could have made them a hit if they wanted to. But that one in particular. So go play some Eric Martin.
Find all of our shows, notes, social, and links at www.pantheonpodcast.com or wherever you listen to great podcasts. All songs can be found for purchase on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. Please purchase these great and important tracks. Find us on Facebook at The RNRAP. We are on Instagram at RNR Archaeology. Tweet us at RNR Archaeology.